Transportation Committee meeting. Today we're going to talk about street zone bills for school zones. And we have two of them on the agenda. There's also another that will be introduced Wednesday, and there's at least one or two more. You're welcome to speak on any issue of school zone speeds. You don't have to direct your comments specifically to one or two of these bills. As I think most of you know, we've gotten a lot of comments about speed zones in schools. Some legislators more than others. And I have not formed an opinion, and I think it's important. I hope most of this committee has not formed an opinion until after we hear your comments. So that's where we're going to go. Prior to listening to you, I do have one committee bill that we have to get introduced, so we'll take care of that. A couple more comments. The reason the legislature passed the school zone bill 2 years ago was for public, for safety of kids. That's the reason we did it. We think 100 kids a year being injured in school zones is too many. So we know we probably made a mistake and didn't quite craft it properly. And you can give us a bad time all you want about that. But also try to be constructive. Try to give us some suggestions of what might be a better idea to still keep kids safe in school zones and allow traffic to flow. The next hearing will be Wednesday at 6:30. And if you testify today, you don't really need to come at 6:30 on Wednesday because your testimony will be on the record. But you're welcome if you want. Okay, I have one committee bill, I believe just one. John, you want to talk about it for a minute?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, LC Draft 2354 was handed out to each of you last week. It's a bill that would establish a somewhat higher speed limit on rural interstate highways. The speed limit would be 70 miles an hour on any portion of an interstate highway that was not within the city boundaries of a city with a population of 50,000 or more.
Thank you, John. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt LC 2354 as a committee bill.
Thank you. Representative Brunas has suggested that we adopt 2354 as a committee bill. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay, we'll open the hearings on 2481 and 2365. For those of you in the audience that haven't had occasion to come before us, we do ask you to state your name, where you're from. Part of that is because I'm going to do such a terrible job of pronouncing some of your names as we want to get it on the record correctly. But the other part is it just helps with us and our record. I don't know how to say this. We want you to come here knowing that we're pretty friendly and we're not going to bite your head off or anything like that. And I know some of you may be nervous. As a matter of fact, I'm probably a little nervous. But come up here and state the facts and be truthful with us, and that's all we really ask. Okay. Yes, and Representative Berger, I think we'll start with you.
Thank you. Chair Gilman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Vicki Berger, State Representative, District 20. I thank you today for hearing my bill, House Bill 2365. I'm especially grateful to you, Mr. Chair, for your gracious attitude when I indicated that I would be introducing legislation to repeal a measure that you worked very hard on last session. Last session, I, too, supported the school zone law because the safety of our children is of primary importance to all of us. Since its implementation, however, I've become convinced that, at least in my district, it has not promoted safety around schools because it has led to so much confusion and anger from the driving public. Confusion because nobody can figure out when it's 20 all the time and when it's 20 some of the time. For example, I have schools in my district, at least three that I've verified, where different streets around the same school will have different messages to the public. That's very confusing. Anger at being slowed to 20 miles an hour on a major arterial in the middle of the night in the summer. It makes no sense. And there's one right down the street here in front of Parrish Middle School that is quite famous in Salem. The most frequent suggestion I get from the many, many constituents I've heard from, and yes, Mr. Chair, I've started passing their emails on to you personally, is to ask why it simply isn't 20 miles per hour when the amber lights are flashing. I then have to explain to my constituents that not all communities have invested in amber lights the way Salem has, and that they are not a mandated piece. My bill is a simple repeal of the law from last session because I believe it is the least we should do. I know that the term "when children are present" is considered ambiguous to law enforcement, and that's probably what got us started in these changes. Oregonians, however, know what a child is and expect to be on the lookout when they're in a school zone. I have no problem going back to that kind of language. Other options are possible, and I'm not averse to amendments which alter the current status, but I must mention the two things that are most important that bother my constituents particularly. One is the inconsistency piece. Let's let school zones be the same no matter what street you're driving on around a school. And the 24-hour piece. Please consider posting hours of the day for school zones, not 20 miles an hour in the middle of the night. I might also suggest that perhaps since we are not willing to pay for an amber light system, we reward those who do, those local jurisdictions that do, by letting them decide when the amber lights flash, it's 20 miles an hour. My particular district is loaded with them, and it would be nice if they consistently went off according to the school hours that they're around. I thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for your willingness to schedule convenient meetings to hear this issue. I know you'll hear many suggestions from the driving public and will carefully consider all the options as you proceed with this matter. I'm sorry, but I have to return to the Revenue Committee, where I am due now, but I will watch the tape of this testimony, and I can assure you that Wednesday night I will be here sitting with you to hear from, I hope, many of my concerned constituents. Can I answer any questions?
Thank you. Good. Question.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Go to
Revenue.
Thank you, Representative. Okay, Charles Cross.
Thank you very much for allowing me to speak. My name is Charles Cross. I'm only cross when you mispronounce my name. I live in Monmouth. Frequently, I drive down past Central High, almost every day, in Independence. I visit friends in Kaiser quite regularly, often staying late. And I have a problem when I come home at 11 or 12 o'clock at night from visiting them that I have to slow down in front of Central High when there is absolutely not one single person on the street. I will not fault the committee or the state for passing the existing law, but I don't think they really considered all the ramifications of it, such as the middle of the night. immediately when the law went into effect and signs were posted by the Independence City, I noticed police cars hiding out to catch those dastardly criminals who were exceeding 20 miles per hour in front of Central High. I have never gotten involved in any kind of thing such as this before, but I feel so strongly that that's the reason I came today. Let me give you one other example. There is a street in Kaiser which is narrow, no sidewalks, not well lit. The posted speed is 35. Therefore, I don't have to slow down at 20 when I go by that school zone. The street in Independence is wide, a nice boulevard. But because it's 30, I have to slow down. And I do. One other thing that I would like to just mention. I was driving down there one day, and I slowed to 20 immediately when I hit the sign. Coming far behind me was another car. Before I was very far into the, maybe a third of the way into the zone, the car came up behind me, obviously exceeding the 20-mile speed limit. Guess who it was? A Monmouth police car. Did he know the speed limit? He tailgated me all the way through that speed, that zone. No, he wasn't on business, I'm sure, because I was in Independence, and that was a Monmouth policeman. I really felt like following him after he turned off and asking him to write himself a ticket. I'll conclude my comments with the fact that I don't really feel anyone has benefited from this, except perhaps city coffers and insurance companies. Because when you receive a ticket, your insurance rates go up. As a former insurance agent of 20 years, I'm well aware of that. Therefore, I'm unalterably opposed to the existing law, and I support changing it, perhaps to the 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. on school days. It is not confusing to me, and I don't understand police having a question about when children are present. If you see a child, you slow down. Does that not make sense? Thank you.
Thank you. Just a minute, Charles. Any questions? Charles, I have one. Do you know if anyone that's gotten a ticket for going over 20 miles an hour at midnight?
I'm not aware of it because I haven't checked the police records.
The reason I ask is there's one piece of legislation coming along that would ask us to refund all those fines. I'm yet to find very many cases. As a matter of fact, I have yet to find one. So. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I know I'm going to ruin this one. Wayne? Is it Wayne Hybenthal?
That's pretty close.
My name is Wayne Hybenthal. I live north of Dallas over in Polk County. And I'm here mainly today because I was scared when I started reading in the paper that somebody thinks that the opposition to the current law has simmered down. Now, the only reason it simmered down is because police in most areas have been smart enough not to go out and try to enforce it. But this could have been the biggest moneymaker since before the Boston Tea Party if they'd have used it that way. But And I couldn't believe it last year when I started reading in the paper that this thing was coming to pass and the thousands of dollars that was going on to change the school signs. Then I began to think, well, how did such a thing as this ever get through? And that's what scares me, too, because you people do a good job. But we vote for you. We elect you. Somebody should have done some yelling in the papers or someplace and let people know this thing was going on. The Senate hearing that came up when I read in the paper now that this one was going to be today, I hadn't seen that. But we don't follow the hearing schedule, those of us out in the country. It's things that make us mad that get us in here. Fortunately, I haven't got a ticket under this thing, but I have driven quite a few places, and I get very confused trying to go down the road. Well, first of all, when it went through, I thought it was 20 miles all the time, and that's what I tried to do, except when I could see there in the middle of summer and nobody was around, and I couldn't see any police car. Why, I figured that didn't mean anything. But it's much easier to see when there's a child present than it is to drive up to some place wondering what the speed limit is and then try to read the little signs that are hooked on the post. You're going to miss the kids if you're trying to do that. That's what scares me about the thing. And to me, this business of it being when children are present, if you can't see a child, you're not going to be able to read one of those signs. And the idea of having the thing 365 days a year, 24/7, is just beyond beyond reason. So this change that is proposed by 2365 looks to me like it would be a good change. And I've got a solution for the money to go back to replace the signs. I've read that it's going to be tough to give however many thousand dollars. I think every legislature that voted for that thing ought to chip in, and that's how those three signs ought to be paid for. Thank you. Next time something like that comes along, let us know out in the country.
Thanks. Any questions? Any questions? Okay. Dan Reed.
My name is Dan Reed. I live in Salem. Well, I'm sure there's nothing concerning the existing legislation that I can say that you folks haven't heard already, and probably in far more graphic terms than I would even think of using today. So my concern, as with the previous speaker, is more with the process. We send folks to the legislature whom we believe are intelligent, thoughtful, thorough, and a whole lot more. So when legislation like this becomes law, legislation that is so unreasonable, illogical, even extreme, one has to wonder what is going on there. And beyond that, how many more pieces of legislation have become law that are just as unreasonable? And I suppose beyond that, there's another concern even more fundamental and more important, and that's respect for legislators. You folks are the ones we should respect as much as anybody. You make our laws. You are our leaders, and we elect you to be that. When I commented in an email, I sent an email to every legislator, an irreverent one. And in some cases, some people had the courtesy of responding to that, and I appreciated that. I said legislators do not have the respect they used to have. And one individual took me to task, and I said, I'll give you five examples. And three were clearly documented with references to other things. I never heard anything more about that from that person. But I want to comment on just one. If about a year ago you drove up I-5 in the area of Centralia, there's a big billboard by the road. And it said, legislators and diapers need changing for the same reason. The first time I saw that, I laughed. But only for a few seconds, because then the real meaning of that hit home. And I thought, how sad. We need to respect you folks as much as anybody. So in this case, I think you should do what's appropriate. Repeal the existing law. Learn from it. Enact something that is reasonable in its place, if you believe that's necessary. And in that context, I support 2365. I believe it's the simpler of the two, hence more effective. And Representative Gilman, you ask for suggestions on improvements. I can't address those because I don't have the information as to those 100 injuries, when they occurred, how they occurred, who was at fault. If I knew more about that, maybe I could. I'd like to know, too, what other states have done if they had the same kind of problem. I think 2365 is better, but surely anything is better than what we have now.
Thank you very much.
Question?
Yeah, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be interested, one of the earlier speakers suggested perhaps having a specific time each weekday that would apply statewide or maybe at least apply in areas where there's not a flashing light. What do you think about that approach, and if you like that?
There are weekdays when there is no school, even during the school year.
So if I could follow, yes, Mr. Chair. Yeah. So in areas where there are not flashing lights, which seems to be the primary area of gap, is the... Do you think the drivers know which days there is school and which days there's not? Or how would you think?
I don't know, sir. Particularly if you're from out of state, the holidays here will be different. If you're traveling through, you may not know those. I think when children are present should be sufficient. If you're going through a school speed zone, you better be cognizant of what is around you. You better be looking for kids. That's only common sense at the outset. And if you're violating that, you're driving recklessly, then you're subject to getting a citation anyway.
Further questions?
Thank you very much, Dan.
You're welcome.
Rick Roberts.
I'm playing cookies, so don't nobody tell me.
Welcome, Rick.
Forget about the cameras, man.
So back me hot. My name is Rick Roberts, and I live in Clackamas County, Wilsonville. There is a primary road that is what you would call a bypass to get around I-5 when it turns into a parking lot sort of thing. So it goes through a school zone. It is a high school school zone primarily, because the other schools really face a residential street off the side, even though there is crosswalk areas that come from that, the children would be coming from that elementary school across the main thoroughfare, which is Boone's Ferry up there, and they would be going across to, of course, residences on the other side of Boone's Ferry west of the school. And then there's, of course, the daycare centers, you know, and all the assortment of, I guess, maybe even private signs that by the time you get from Wilsonville, even the north end of Wilsonville, to the south end of Tualatin, you are inundated with an enormous amount of signs. And one of the things I found that was particularly interesting, that they got flashing lights and they got really big signs that say 20 miles per hour when children are present or whatever like this, and then when it comes down to the end of the school zone, they got this end of school zone and that's it. And it's usually not in a line of sight. It's obscured by bushes and assortment of other things like this, which I find more like an Andy Griffith type one, you know, with a speed track down the field. Yeah, right. You can tell how old I am. I think I just hated myself. But I was jotting down some notes here as I was waiting for my turn, and I wanted to find out to some degree, even though I do know as a 201st Precinct PCP for the Republican Party of my neighborhood, a lot of people don't get to know about what is going on, what people are doing, because even if they're registered to vote, the last thing you do is vote. All the work is done by the time you get to the voting part of it, actually, because if you don't show up at precinct meetings and stuff like that and know who your precinct committee persons are, who your chairmen are, who your house captains are, you have lost a whole lot. If you want to feel disenfranchised, air is a good way to do it, and that sort of thing. But I found a particular interesting thing in a number of legislatures, legislative persons' actions, is the majority rule in the country, not the majority rule of a survey taken to validate any bill, much less this one. Somebody did another one with the crosswalk law, which passes this thing too. If you're going down through the school zone, don't worry about the 20-mile-an-hour speed one, because there is this other crosswalk law, which I presume is still valid and in force, that you must wait at the crosswalk until the person has passed by the next lane over from the direction you're going. Even on a opposing traffic lane kind of situation, or two-car passing lane, that person must, according to the best information I have, must be on the other side of that lane before they do it. And that, in some cases, means the person's on the sidewalk. Well, that was a little bit redundant, I guess you would call it, as far as I'm concerned anyway. But then, I'm not the brightest bulb in the package, but then I give my best. I think that's probably what happened with this bill on the 20-mile-an-hour deal. At various different times, they spent a lot of time on putting a really big sign up there for when the school zone starts, and then a little sign, for, like I said, for when it ended. And I don't think anybody's paid any attention to, well, the policeman one day followed me all the way to, he followed me all the way down to the stoplight beyond that until the school zone ended, you know. You can go on to more important, really more important items. I was particularly, when I first got here, and you happened to mention, Mr. Gilman, that the bill was started in 2002 and, or was being discussed up at that, from that time on up until whenever it got passed here.
It started in 2003, and it started in the Senate.
Started in the Senate?
Came over from there, yes.
The one bill that you introduced here, that's the way the process goes, and somebody introduced that? Was there any kind of number of other people that come into the deciding whether they're going to even propose the bill?
Rick, you're going to, if you stay around, you'll hear some people that supported the bill, mm-hmm. and their reasons for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, as I stated, safety of kids, and that's the main reason.
Yeah.
And we're still struggling with how best to do that.
Yeah, I understand that part, and I think I've got a little bit of help as we get down through the last little quick notes that I put down here. The fine part of it. I don't know who decided how much the fine was to be. And where it was to go for these two, I think it was $230 for a fine for whatever speeding thing or not.
Can I ask you the question? Do you know anyone that's gotten a ticket for speed zone in the middle of the night?
Not in middle of night or daytime either. I usually try to do 10 miles an hour through those zones, just for pure spite sort of thing. But my mother taught me how to cross the street. By the time I was 6 years old, okay, that's when I was allowed to cross the street, and that wasn't in a school zone or otherwise. This is, if I was crossing the street and I was about 6 years old or thereabouts when I learned how to cross the street, I was in deep trouble. I think the term was called woodshed. Something says authoritarian, disciplinarian type thing. Mm-hmm. If I wasn't where I wasn't supposed to be. So I wanted to make that mention that there and be very careful about neurotic neurosis. We have a lot of that rampant, and that's even in the workplace, too. Let's see. In the other area, I think, of education of this particular area, we do not do any and all of our children any good. If in disservice that we do and disrespect by not teaching them to be adults, because obviously by the time you're in high school, which I guess is you're in ninth grade now, the high school, and it's middle school or whatever they're calling it now because the junior high was broken. If you can't handle yourself by the time you're 18, Like when I was in the service, I don't want you behind me with a loaded gun. You don't know which end of the gun the bullet comes out of. And I think it's very important to be teaching our children to be responsible. You be on the sidewalk. You be in the crosswalk. You look both ways before you cross. And you cross responsibly. And this sort of thing. I've been going through that one particular school zone up there, and the very people that they're supposedly protecting in high school are the ones that are now able to drive, and boy, they're vroom, getting this class on time, and vroom, they're getting out of class. Why? Oh, we're done with
Rick,
that teacher.
Rick, we have several other people who are going to testify.
Okay.
Could you kind of wrap it up?
One last little point, if I may. Children, as it was in my day, if we didn't have especially a happy home life, we were at school that night, too. We weren't supposed to be there. We weren't there for class. But we were sitting down there having a little b-ball, or we were having a little bit of other things we were doing at the school grounds. And if that's where you're applying that, I think that was a misnomer also in the application of this law at all. I am for putting it back to the way it was. That because it was not broken, it did not need to be fixed. It needed to be show the children that you will attain adulthood and you will be responsible adults and productive members of the community. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Questions?
Thank you.
Dick Haglin.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Dick Haglund. I reside at 3570 Deerfield Drive, South Salem. I would first like to thank Representative Berger. I talked to her last fall about this issue, and she said when you came in session, she discussed it. So I appreciate she's followed through on it and your efforts. I am here because I read in the paper last week the editorial by Representative Berger and Dalto about just they need a head count for people that are for or opposed this issue. I'm here because I just want to say that I think possibly the bill is a little bit ill-conceived, maybe overkill. We're all in favor of safety for the kids, but then we're looking for a balance. I think the roads now are a cauldron of frustration, irritation. This is one more issue that adds to that brew. So I simply want to say I'm in favor of this bill as sponsored by Representative Berger and Dalto and many others, and I appreciate your efforts.
Thank you. Questions?
Yes. I appreciate being here and would love to ask you the same question I asked earlier. If we were to replace this with some kind of a set hour limits each weekday, someone suggested 7 to 5, some kind of set hours that would be consistent statewide every weekday, what do you think about that approach?
I would say 7 to 5. I think ideally if you could do the amber light everywhere, that would be the perfect solution, because then you can alter the days that it's on, you can alter situations. If not, then I would say 7 to 5. I think there's some school zones where it lists 7 to 9 and then 4 to 6, but then you do have the middle of day issues. But if I had to raise my hand on one, it would be the 7 to 5 issue. So, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Paul Norris.
Thank you, Chair Gilman and members of the committee. I won't read my testimony because you have a lot of people to get through today. Basically, I recommend going back to the pre-1903 law, but I think that the amber light, I realize that jurisdictions all over the state don't have that, but when you talk about time delay, a whole bunch of issues, I think it would be money well spent. Local jurisdictions, ODOT, whatever, spend millions of dollars to save a few minutes and buy a little safety. I think that we're talking pretty much in urban areas and rural areas, that there's significant time impacts and safety impacts, both for the motorists, for freight movement, for whatever. My real life example is nobody talks about transit. I ride, I'm Paul Norris from Kaiser, and I ride the number 9 Kaiser Central line sometimes. And the comments by the bus drivers from Chariot's buses after this was adopted, because that line goes through multiple school zones. And at best, that line has a hard time getting out and getting back downtown and meeting the transfer. So a lot of times, a couple of minutes delay means that that bus doesn't meet its transfer downtown. And if you need to transfer, you may get to wait up to 30 minutes to catch the next bus. As far as your question, I'm trying to anticipate questions on specific time for schools. I mean, it's a whole range out there, and it would take really a broad 7 to 5 or something like that, and then you affect transit and FedEx and everybody else that's out there during the day and rush hour and whatever. So I think it would be money well spent to put it into signals. Also, you're talking about signing of school zones, and I've brought an example on page 2. And this is not my good example. This is an example of a community action Head Start program on River Road north of Kaiser. So imagine you're heading north on this 55-mile-per-hour road, heading towards the Brooks Interchange. And the top picture, you see that there's a school zone there. And it's probably dusk in the morning, kind of like this picture. And you get near to the school, and you see 20 miles per hour. And then in small print, when the zone starts, you see it's 7:30 to 9, 3:30 to 5. Also imagine, like I've seen, there are three Marion County sheriff deputies sitting over there with their radar guns. Luckily, I was a passenger, and we saw somebody else had been stopped. But if you're going to sign, I think there needs to be standards that, you know, maybe at the first sign, you would know when that was in effect, because there's no way that you could approach that school zone at 55 miles an hour and have any idea when it was in effect. So, in conclusion, I recommend going back to the 2003 law and probably putting resources into the blinking lights. I think it would be money well spent. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you. All questions?
Yeah, actually, I don't know if it's so much a question, but I appreciate that testimony. I have here a book called The Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices. It is put out by the Federal Highway Administration, and each individual state adopts it. Oregon has adopted this. This manual contains the basic principles that govern the design and use of traffic control devices. And to be effective, a traffic control device should meet 5 basic requirements. 1, fulfill a need. 2, command attention. 3, convey a clear, simple meaning. This is an example of where you are going 55 miles an hour. And to slow down, determine what the times are, where it applies, and then looking at your watch. Meanwhile, there's no warning. And it says, also the last one is, or there's 2 more, command respect from the road users. Well, give adequate time for proper response. That is sadly lacking in a lot of these areas. I think that's well demonstrated in this picture.
Paul, I really appreciate the comments about flashing lights. If I were king, we'd just have flashing lights. But we cannot mandate that. There is some national money that may be available, and I'm hopeful that we can figure out a way that at least in school zones where the speed is more than 25 miles an hour, that you have flashing lights. We'll see how that all comes out.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Pete Christensen.
Good afternoon. My name is Pete Christensen. I'm a resident of Dallas, and I'm here because of the speed law, and I'm concerned about what I think was good intentions on the part of some legislators to work for safety for children, but it got carried away beyond what it needed to. I have difficulty with pulling up to a street sign that says I have to go 20 miles an hour, and at 10 o'clock at night, and there is no one. Not even many vehicles. But because I've been trained, you should follow the law. Okay, well then I guess I go 20 miles an hour, even though this seems rather ridiculous to me. A comment was made, have you seen anyone stopped for that? That's not my perception of the way you check if the law is working, to get a ticket to see if the policemen are there. So I don't think that's a good idea. I have some grandchildren in Forest Grove, and when I drive from Dallas to Forest Grove, I get a variety of signs, and I think it's quite confusing as to what the intent is. So if I drive by one of the elementary schools in Dallas, I have a sign that says 20 miles an hour anytime. I go 2 miles to the Faith Christian School, and there's a sign that says school days, 7 to 12, 3 to 4 p.m., when children are present. I go on to Amity, and I have one sign that says 20 miles an hour. I have another sign that says when children are present. When I continue on north, almost to Forest Grove, out completely in the country, rural countryside, there's a sign that says when children are present. And everyone's going 55 to 60 miles an hour then, so they're not really paying attention to that. The time we need to have the safety, and I think that's a very important concern, is 7 to 4, 7 to 5, a period of time when children are going to school and going home, but we don't need it in the additional times. And I am concerned that we not encourage people to break the law or to say, you know, I don't think that's a good law, so I'm not going to follow it. Whatever the law is, it needs to be reasonable so people can be expected to follow it and it can be enforced. So the page that I handed out to you are suggestions that I would hope would be included in the bill. That the speed limit adjacent to schools or crosswalks shall be 20 miles per hour during school days from 7 o'clock to 4 o'clock, like that 5 if you think that's better. Such speed limit shall be posted at these locations. It'd be nice to have flashing signs. I don't think most school districts or communities have the dollars to invest in flashing lights unless they absolutely need to. But if this is state law, it's 20 miles an hour. During this time period on school days, 7 to 4, it's very clear when it takes effect. And then I'd suggest you add one additional provision. Cities or school districts may establish less restrictive, not more restrictive, but less restrictive limits by posting a sign showing the enforced speeds and times. If you have a flashing light, the flashing light says you may go 30 miles an hour except when the light is flashing. Okay, then you come down to that limit. But you don't require additional outlay by other outlying areas that may not have money to buy flashers. But these two in combination would give you a clear statewide limit for speed on certain days, certain times, and would also allow for schools that have a less restrictive plan to continue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Christensen, in your notes that you provided us, you said adjacent to schools or crosswalks. I'm presuming by crosswalks you mean those that are part of a school, the school area, school ground, school zone.
Or that the school district has chosen to mark as an area when children are present. For example, if I'm driving through Amity, the school is, the elementary school is maybe 4 blocks off the highway, but there is a marked crosswalk through there, and that's what I'm speaking to in that point.
Specifically, okay, but it's identified specifically for school children to be able to have that access to the school.
And if you follow that suggestion, then there would be a sign saying it applies at that point.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Further questions? Yes, well, Representative Bruce.
Thank you. Okay. I thought maybe somebody else down there had a different name than me. I just wanted to clarify. I think I heard you say that you pass a number of signs that specifically say when children are present, mm-hmm. and no postings, nothing else?
They will say when 20 miles an hour when children are present. So does that mean if there are no children present, then I don't have to slow down to 20 miles an hour? I think the state law says 20 miles an hour anytime. I'm suggesting this would clarify okay. when that applies.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that.
I'll point out that there are brochures over there on the table that explain the law as convoluted as it may be, and you're welcome to take them. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, let's see. Donna. Come on up, Donna, and help me with this word.
My name's Donna Barchinger. That's what you were going to say, I'm sure.
Yes.
And I'm from Salem. And I'm beginning to get the trend here that most of the speakers ahead of me were all on the same short list that we'd like to see this law changed. I didn't know how this worked, never been to one of these before, so I wrote you a nice letter. I will just try to skim over the brief part, and I'll turn the rest into your committee assistant if the tape goes gunny bag and you want to read it. I too am not. I appreciate that you took the time to try to come up with an idea, but like most of the people who've spoken before me, I think maybe a little more time, a little less. Coming up with a quick resolution would have been the way to go, but I do appreciate it. I also appreciate the opportunity to speak at this, and my thanks to whoever it was that publicized that this is something that you can actually come down here and do. The issue with the school is we have conflicting information. I know of two schools in the Salem area that have a 35-mile-an-hour zone on one side of the school and a 25-mile-an-hour zone on the other side of the school, which means the current law says I can continue to go 35 miles an hour and run over the kids on that side of the school, but not run over the kids on the slower side of the school. Seems not right. The flashing yellow lights, I think they're great if they work right. I spend a lot of time going down, and I don't know if you're familiar with Salem, but I spend time going down Center Street, which would be east of Lancaster, west of Gordon Road. There is no school on that portion of Center Street. The closest school is probably three blocks from there. That flashing light goes off every morning that I know of, Monday through Friday, and runs till at least 9:15. In the 3 or 4 years, I don't know how long the light's been there, I have never once seen a child on that street when that light is flashing at that time of day. So I think the light is fine, but the technicians need to do some real honest-to-goodness looking at when they need to be flashing and when they really don't. The other thing is, I discovered in this, we all interpret the law apparently differently. I don't know if it's because the only communication I got from the law came through the Statesman Journal. Maybe they got it right, maybe they didn't, but that's the way I got my information. I've found a lot of people just really don't know the law. So if you're going down the road and it's 35, but you might be having to go 20, I'll go 28. 28 is a compromise. That's what people tend to do. We're not sure where we're supposed to be going, so we figure maybe I'll go a little slower, but I don't know. It has to be clear. I would like to suggest...
Oh, go ahead.
You're kibitzing with somebody in the back, huh?
Yeah. Representative Berger, would you like to come up?
Lost my whole train of thought.
I'm sorry. I really apologize.
Oh, okay. I would like to pose. The gentleman that spoke before me or just before me talked about Amity. I, too, drive through Amity. I have a daughter at Linfield. Within two blocks of each other on the same street with the same posted speed, there's two different signs saying how fast you're supposed to go and when you're supposed to be going that speed. What I have appreciated, I find it at Bethel School, which is east of Salem on State Street, and I believe it's one of the signs in Amity, they specifically say the time. They're broken down into the time of day that they want you to go 20 miles an hour. I appreciate that we're busy people, and I think we all know what time it is almost every second of the day. I suspect everyone in this room has at least consulted that clock on the wall or their watch two or three times in the last 45 minutes. So we do know what time it is, and it doesn't take a lot of effort to know that. I guess that's it.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Questions?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You referred to the crosswalk on Center Street, east of Lancaster.
Uh-huh.
And this was an example of a question I asked the previous witness about crosswalks that aren't near the school.
Right.
Who determined that crosswalk should be lit?
I don't know that it's a crosswalk. Is, you know, the yellow flashing line is above there, or the yellow flashing light. I don't know who puts them up. I have no idea. But it's up there that you're, you know, it's 20 miles an hour when that light is flashing. There's also no end of school zone on that entire street. You go through two school zones and there's none there. But
well, forgive me, I'm not familiar with that street.
That's fine.
But
it's
I'm presuming the way you described it that somebody would argue that there's kids that have to get to the school and that's a popular crosswalk.
Mm. Could be. Like I say, in 3 or 4 years, I've not seen any kids at the time those lights are going on. So.
Thank you.
Don't know.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you very much, Donna. John Truman?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is John Kerman. I'm a former school teacher here in Salem, Oregon, and I appreciate coming before you today to express my opinions. I am in favor of House Bill 2365. Just a comment. Children are our just most precious things in the whole wide world, and it really concerns me that we cannot find money for some reason, whatever it may be, that we can't put up consistent flashing lights where children are and when they're present. It concerns me that with the computers and the technology that we have today, that they cannot be controlled via computers. It concerns me that we do not spend the money to take care of our most precious commodity, and that's children. I think that in possibly giving an answer, that we can certainly bring this before the people of Oregon. And when the people of Oregon know that we are asking for more money, and I know that's a political thing, for our children and for our children's safety, I think that we'll find in overwhelming numbers that they'll agree to an additional 10-cent tax on gasoline or on whatever it may be. But I think there's distinct answers for this situation. But to allow drivers to guess when they can go a certain speed, when they cannot, when there's a PTA meeting and there's children present, or when there's a day off for teachers and there's no children present, that can be easily remedied by a consistent set of lights that tells every person that's driving, children are there, we need to slow down, or we'll pay the $350 price. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Okay. John Michelle, let's go ahead, John, and have you come up now.
Chair Gilman, members of the committee, I'm John O'Shell, County Road Program Manager with the Association of Oregon Counties. Might mention is part of my experience before I took this job, 25 years of county engineer, county roadmaster, county public works director, have dealt with speed issues for many years. They are extremely tough. The association's position on this is that we're not taking any specific position, not recommending any solution. We are committed to try and help you find a solution that will stick. Sort of just jump ahead based on testimony I've heard. The biggest concern we have is if we keep changing the rules, it confuses people. Confusion causes accidents. We need to find a way to get ourselves an answer. A couple things on the solution. Signs should not be considered. You know, the cost of replacing them really isn't the issue. It costs the counties about $100,000 to replace the signs with the last change. Compare that with one accident. It's trivia. I mean, we're not going there on saying there's a problem with signs. So whatever we find as a solution, we'll find the money for signs. The other issue on cost, though, is the flashing lights. You've heard the testimony. Flashing lights are the best answer. We absolutely agree. If you can have flashing lights that are flashing when you need them, that you can change it so that if you got a evening PTA night or something, you can flash them just that night, best solution in the world. The cost is a major element. These signs are not inexpensive. Anything, if we can find grant money and so forth, great. What you know is there's not new revenue, which means it has to come from somewhere else. anything you can find for us, we would love and love to do it, but that's not probably going to be a solution that we can solve and by using it everywhere. So we're probably going to end up with signals where we have them, where we have them. The rules should support those, that pretty much supersedes anything else that happens out there. The tough part is going to be what to do with signs. Now, when I said we don't have a specific solution, be aware that even amongst the road officials, which would match every other organization I have, when you get more than four people, you've got at least three solutions. No one agrees on the best solution on this. This is going to be a tough one for you. We are committed to support you every way we can. We are committed to supporting whatever solution we come up with, but it's going to be tough. A couple guidelines to help on this. And I'm actually flipping to the second page of my testimony. We need to be very careful about a one-size-fits-all solution for the entire state. The schools and the roads adjacent to these schools are very different as you go around the state. And I've listed a series of examples. You think a bit, you'll come up with other. You know, it's not just the speed of the traffic going by. Right now, the stuff's tied to the speed zones. It has to do with the volume of the traffic. It has to do, are we talking about first and second graders? Are we talking high school kids? It has to do with, is it a school right next to the road, or is it a school that's set way back with nice fencing and so forth? It has to do with, are the kids getting there by crossing the road, or are they coming from the other direction? There's a whole bunch of things on here. The hours has been mentioned over and over. It's very tricky to define what hours a school operates, especially when you start talking evening events, especially when you start talking school playgrounds that have kids active on the weekends. It's very tough, but nonetheless, one of the other issues on the other side is, and you've heard the testimony on it, one of the things that really causes people to drive too fast through a school zone is the fact that they're used to driving through them when they don't see kids there much of the time. That's when they develop bad habits. We need to get some sort of signing, warning, so forth, there to really focus down when they need to slow down. A couple things as you're working through, I have helped a whole lot when working through various contentious sign issues working with the counties. It's real easy, although you haven't had too much testimony here, but I imagine you will before we're done, to focus on it's really important to slow down. Well, everybody agrees you should be slowing down when the kids are there. Everybody who drives agrees you should be slowing down, but not everybody. You have the weird, odd ones, but no signing's going to fix that. But you've got to turn around and ask yourself the other question, and here's the tough one, is when you really look at what you need for signing, don't think in terms of what you need in signing to get the other people to slow down. Think of, if I were driving down the road, what would it take to get me to slow down? You know, the fact is, everyone agrees you shouldn't drive through school zones when the kids are out there and so forth. The reality is, it happens quite a bit. And it's happening quite a bit from people who are basically reasonable drivers. And so we need to figure out a solution that what is it we need to be telling with signs or whatever to get those reasonable drivers to get in the habit of going slow when they need to be going slow. That's a tough challenge, but basically if we're going to slow the kids down, that's the challenge we have to solve. Is what are we going to put up there that really flags specific times, specific locations, specific what we change, how we get to it? We've got to come up with something that really flags when you need to slow down, not just a one time, everybody got to do it the same at every school, because that just, we end up with signing that people don't agree with. I think I've covered most of my testimony, went real fast. I welcome for any questions, but the biggest, strongest point is, we would like to work with you on finding a solution. It is going to be tough and difficult, and we appreciate that.
Thank you, John. Questions, Jess, represent that.
Yes, I do. You know, after the speed limits went up on the freeways, they would, and then they're changing back to the 55, they'll often say reduce speed ahead. What do you think about having something at least ahead of time so people can respond in time? I mean, I know there's no way you can do a one-size-fits-all. You know, just at least giving some warning that, okay, from 2 to 5, this school zone is 20 miles per hour.
Chair Gilman, Representative Thatcher, outstanding proposal. I think even if we didn't change law, you will see more of that. I think what we've got right now is a bunch of people, even within the road agencies, trying to figure out the requirements of the law and what the signs need to be. But I totally agree, especially if we come up with a solution that talks about what hours are there, we clearly need bigger signs with bigger numbers and bigger messages and put further out so people have a chance to see it, understand it, and respond to it before they get to the school zone. Having a little placard with hours on it right out as you get into the zone just isn't good enough. And you are correct. We will need some additional signing. I think that will happen no matter what solution we come up with needs to happen.
I just want to say for the record, I am a signing contractor. However, I think most of these signs were done by jurisdictions and not subcontracted. So it's not self-serving when I say that. Please understand.
Further questions?
Mr.
Thank you very much. Oh, excuse me.
I have a quick. If we were to propose something that would allow each city or county to post hours, how would you, I guess, is this not consistent enough? Would it, how would the counties feel about this?
Chair Gilman, Representative Beyer, bear in mind that right now where we're talking on the 35 and above posting hours, that is what the law says. Basically, the road authority, whether it be the city, county, or state, has the final say. My understanding is most of them work very closely with the schools to come up with the school's recommendation for what the hours should be. The answer was, how will it work? I think it will work very well in most places. There will be a few places where people will disagree.
Okay, thank you, John. Mark Weir from City of Park.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Mark Landauer with Office of Government Relations for the City of Portland. Thank you for allowing us to testify today. I've asked Mark Weir, who is the City of Portland's Traffic Investigations Manager, to appear before you today and provide some testimony. Thank you.
Chair Gilman, for the record, my name is Mark Clear. I manage the City of Portland's Office of Traffic Investigations. And I think after hearing a lot of the real thoughtful testimony that we have today, I bring a somewhat unique perspective to your session today. As part of my job, one, I get paid to look at where kids are being hit and why kids are being hit. In addition to that, a not very positive part of my job is I get to go out to the neighborhood meetings, sometimes in people's houses after a child's been hit. Unfortunately, a couple times a year I go out after a child's been killed. And it's definitely, with a three-year-old and my son, make me think really thoughtfully and hard about what we can do to improve on the law. I brought a proposed solution to you. I would definitely support others that said the current law isn't working as intended. Let me just give you a little bit of background on why we want lower speeds in school zones. First of all, there are a significant number of children being hit in school zones and children just being hit generally. In the 1990s in the City of Portland, we had a child hit every 3 days. Unfortunately, two-thirds of those kids that are hit, whether they're biking or walking, end up having significant enough injuries that they have to be hospitalized or treated medically. And what's really important here is that two factors. One is that if a child's struck at 30 miles per hour, they're four times more likely to die than if they're struck at 20 miles per hour. They're also, if you strike a child driving 20 miles per hour, there's a 35% chance that they won't even need medical treatment. But at 30 miles per hour, that drops down to 5%. The second factor that I think is really important, and I think it's really important based on a lot of the comments we heard today to understand, is that the most common type of crash affecting a child school age is the dart-out crash. It's a crash that occurs when a kid makes the wrong choice. They dart out between vehicles without enough time to stop. Unfortunately, that's where the When Children Present standard doesn't work. If we're expecting to see the child, it's often going to be too late. And just another factor just to add to that is it's not just that kids haven't been taught. There's more and more studies that show that kids actually have cognitive reasons why they don't make the right choices. For example, they have 30% less peripheral vision than an average-aged adult. They also have a hard time differentiating where sound comes from. Probably the scariest thing is that there's a lot of data that shows that kids actually think they've made eye contact with a vehicle when they've made eye contact with the lights or the grill. They often see that as a face. And so whereas a driver might think, you know, well, it won't even see the child thinks they've made eye contact. Also, they have a hard time differentiating speed, and that's what leads to more of these dart-out type collisions. For these reasons, we think it's really important that we build on what this legislature tried to do last session and make us, and make stronger law law this session. Just quickly, the problem that the legislature was trying to address last session was a real problem. The Wentschuld and present standard wasn't working, and unfortunately, we don't have the resources to provide flashing beacons at all locations. And for some of our slower speed locations, it may not make sense. What I have done is brought for you to look at first a graphic that shows what the current law looks like. And if everybody has that, you can see the multitude of signs that we have out at different locations. And then secondly, I brought a graphic that shows what we would propose as far as a solution. From my perspective and from our traffic safety community's perspective, which includes we have a traffic safety safe routes to school effort that includes superintendents from our school districts in the city of Portland. But what we would propose is that we have, for 95% of our school zones that are 30 miles per hour or less, we would have a 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. rider. And we would just get that message out through a media. We think it should be a statewide message out that we have that it's 20 miles per hour at all times for those types of facilities. For our higher speed facilities, we think that we should go back to the old law temporarily when flashing or when children are present. And we think that's probably statewide somewhere around 10 to 15% of all school zones. I think if you looked at the numbers, and it would be a good thing for a working group to do over the next couple weeks, that we're well on the way to establishing beacons at those high priority locations anyway. And I would agree with other comments that we should continue to invest in school beacons at those locations. So hopefully in the future, you'd end up with a system where it's 20 miles per hour on all days, 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. on the 30s and less. And then on the other locations, drivers would see beacons. We'd actually move away from the when children present standard. I just want to provide a little bit more feedback about why I think the 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. is important, and also why I think it needs to be all days. From national data and also from our experience in Portland, we do need to have the 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Even though the 10 p.m. may sound later to a lot of us, a lot of events that happens at schools that are some of the most risky events are later in the evenings. If you think about basketball games, sometimes football games, other kinds of events, those are events where the streets get extremely congested in a lot of locations. There's more and more opportunities for dart outs. I think especially true for kids, but probably true for all of us. Sometimes the interaction between young boys, young girls also leads to poor decision making. Those kinds of things happen around football, basketball, those other kinds of things that are happening at night. So we would support, and our superintendents support, having that extended period of time. The other reason that we think we need to have it in the summertime is that there's more and more services that are going on around schools. In the city of Portland, I know a number of larger jurisdictions throughout the state, school lunches, other social services are provided at schools in the summertime. We have pools located. Parks and other facilities are using those facilities as well. Just in closing, we're really thankful that the legislature tried to fix the problem last session. If nothing else, they've done an excellent job of getting more attention to this issue. We also look forward to being part of a working group. We think over the next few weeks we could craft policy that would come up with a solution that would work. And we have the opportunity to really build on to succeed where we know we have a huge problem. In the 1970s, two-thirds of kids walked or biked to school. Today, less than 10% of kids walk and bike to school. I presented you with some statistics that shows, along with that decline in kids walking and biking, there's been a similar increase in childhood obesity. This is really an important part of the solution. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Questions? Oh, yes. Representing the answer.
Again, sorry.
Sure.
I'm just thinking of a lot of people I've talked to. I don't think anybody's really cognizant of, okay, well, this street's 30 miles per hour or less, therefore we'll know that this sign will be in place, and then another street going along this side of the school on the other side, well, this one's going to be 30. Nobody, you know, we want consistency, not really based on the speed limit. Based on the people I've talked to me, it's still a little on the confusing side.
Yeah, and I think that's probably one of the the hardest issues that this working group's going to have to address in the next couple weeks is, should the 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. or something similar to that just apply to 25-mile-per-hour streets or apply to 25 and 30? In the city of Portland, we only are the 30-mile-per-hour. In the city of Portland, we only have about 85% of our streets are 25. From my perspective as someone who works with engineers and goes to a lot of neighborhood meetings, the simplest distinction on streets is the 25 to 30. Even though I agree with you that sometimes it's hard to tell what speed you're on, the simplest break would be the 25 to 30. That said, I think there's a good justification for having the longer speed reduction on the 30-mile-per-hour facilities, so it might be something that you have to balance. But one of the challenges in thinking about this is that in most jurisdictions, police officers by practice are only writing tickets when people are, 10 or 11 miles an hour over the speed limit. Well, that would mean that a lot of times in school zones for a 30-mile-per-hour facility, tickets are only being written when drivers are driving 41 miles per hour. And because of that, you have a lot of drivers that are driving at that speed. That creates a really dangerous problem around our schools at all times, not just in the limited times when kids are going to school. So I think there is a real issue that we need to touch there, but I agree with you that that's one that the working group should address.
Follow up, please.
Further question, Paul? Yes.
Yes. You mentioned earlier that there were a lot of children being hurt in the school zones. Now, what was that number? And is it during what time of day are we talking about, too?
Within the city of Portland, I don't have the specific numbers on the kids in school zones. I can give you a little bit of background. What we have is data that shows the injuries occurring, the largest number of injuries occurring in the period between 3 and 8 p.m. So it's generally the period when kids are probably, outside, less supervised, their parents may not be home from work. It's those kinds of times when we've experienced the highest number of pedestrian injuries.
And not necessarily in school zones.
Definitely not necessarily in school zones. And I think the one thing that we're doing in Portland and a number of other jurisdictions are around safe routes to school is we're trying to establish pathways that lead to parks and to schools. And so even though the collisions may not be occurring right in schools, we think it's really important that we think that we can have a positive impact if we establish school zones and safe paths to schools or parks, those other kinds of facilities. Then parents will be in a position of encouraging their kids to use those paths to or those routes to get to schools. So our hope is that if we can make those situations safer, we can reduce not only the collisions that are occurring in the school zones, but we can also reduce collisions that are occurring because kids don't know where it's safe to walk.
Again? Yes.
Sorry. One thing that keeps me from sending my kids out is not necessarily the traffic, though that is a. It's more of the sickos and perverts that are out there. And that includes parks and schools because that's
right.
Where they like to hang out.
Yeah.
So I just don't want to make it confusing still.
Right.
And I think this is still on the confusing side.
I think that's a really good point. That's something we've really tried to work hard with our Safe Routes to School, the school district superintendents on, is the other issues besides traffic safety. However, after distance, there's a lot of good studies on this. We've done some in Portland as well. Traffic safety is the first concern identified by parents and kids. Right after that, you're right, is other crime issues.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Lehrer. I think your testimony was powerful. My question goes a little bit toward Representative Thatcher's first question, which is, do you have any way that you can compare, and maybe enough time hasn't passed since the current law that we're debating today hasn't been on the books that long, but can you show us or can you demonstrate a reduction in traffic accident incidents within school zones since this legislation became law?
Unfortunately, you're right that we're not able to do that yet.
There's a significant delay in the amount. Well, I think it's about a six-month delay after the end of the year that we're provided data from DMV. So we're really, we actually have some staff from Portland State University on board with us to do some of that analysis, but we don't have the statistics yet.
Mr. Chair, follow up. Can you answer that question anecdotally? This is, you see it every day. It's what you follow and get your arms around every day.
What I can tell you anecdotally from my from where I sit, and I get a lot of phone calls, and my staff of 13 and myself goes out to, you know, on average at least one neighborhood meeting a week. From our perspective, we haven't heard what you heard today, which is people being really upset with the law. From our perspective, in general, people feel like where they see the at all times, they think that's really positive. They are really confused about why we said that school zones that weren't adjacent to schools versus were adjacent, you know, that was as it.
Oh,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. When I mean anecdotally, I hear what you're saying there. Right. I mean with the accidents themselves. And once again, part of your job is to look at that and unfortunately talk to the families when there's a bad situation. I know you haven't received the data back from ODOT, but what are you seeing just on the street right now compared to 2 years ago?
Right. The main thing that I'm seeing is that I'm hearing just real positive things from neighbors about that they feel like it feels safer. They see people driving slower. In fact, we've even had a few people come to us and say, people are driving so slow on the streets in front of schools that we see traffic diverting onto other streets. To us, you know, that looks like, you know, that the system's working, although, you know, sometimes it creates other unintended consequences as far as traffic flow. I think it's a little too early for us to be able to make conclusions about reductions in crashes, but we're definitely so far pleasantly surprised with how well a fairly confusing system seems to be working, and that's what leads us to think that some simplifications of this to get better support from the general public, the legislature, could really put Oregon in a position of being a leader on how to deal with this difficult issue.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate this traffic. Okay. That, to me, is making things a little bit easier. But I'm a little bit concerned about your recommendation of 6 a.m. to 10 p.m., and I know that's, we're just throwing it out there for cards on the table. But the 2365 refers to flashing lights operated in accordance with ORS 811.106, which says that the lights may be operated only at times when children are scheduled to arrive at or leave the school. The person that spoke prior to you, Mr. O'Shell from AOC, said one of the things we need to watch for is a one-size-fits-all prescriptive. I'd be curious on your thoughts about how do we get our local school boards and other folks, the Safe Route to Schools folks, involved in determining where the crosswalks are, where the school zones are, and how to indicate those and how to set the hours based on your community? Because some of the schools in Eastern Oregon, we could fit all the kids in a suburban.
Right.
You know, so, and I appreciate the concerns that you've got and the issues that you have that are unique in many respects to the city of Portland, but that's not going to fit in some of our other communities.
Right. Yeah. Representative Burley, I think that's a real thoughtful question. The fortunate thing I think we have in Oregon is that we do have a really strong traffic safety community around Safe Routes to School. It includes representatives from across the state. In fact, the current school zone standards about how long a school zone should be, which are really restrictive. In general, it's usually only 150 feet or less from the beginning of the frontage of a school to the end, or usually around a block. We're developing by the statewide group, and then then the implementation of where we put crosswalks around schools, when we mark them, how big the school zones, was based on that statewide recommendations. And there is some leeway, but a lot of it's super specific. I mean, it says things, and people who sit in jobs like mine have to deal with a lot of frustration around this sometimes, but it says things like, we won't mark a crosswalk in an elementary school unless the school agrees to do safety patrol. That's hard to explain to a neighborhood who says, we know it'll be safer if there's a crosswalk, and we say, well, the statewide safety group said it wouldn't, and there's good reasons why. But anyway, to get to your question, I think we could use that group that's existing over the next few weeks to talk to them about how this proposal could be modified to make sure that it meets the examples that you bring up about existing law, but also meets the objectives of different parts of the state.
When you, just for clarification, when you said how this proposal meets that, are you referring to yours or are you referring to 23?
Right. Yeah. I was referring to the proposal that I bring to this meeting.
Okay. Well, what I'd be interested in with this work group, which I'm presuming will probably form at some point in the not-too-distant future, what I'd be interested in is whether or not 2365, as currently drafted, provides us that flexibility.
Right. So I think that should all be part of what the work group would look at.
Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Roger, come on up.
Giving you some toughies today. Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Roger Trigstead. I live in West Salem in Polk County, and I'm a retired ODOT traffic engineer. And in my 32 years with ODOT, I don't think I've ever seen a traffic device or law that has been caused so much confusion among the motoring public. Not only do they have to figure out whether it's an underlying speed zone is 30 or 35 or whatever, the different jurisdictions have signed it so many different ways. But most of all, my complaint is that I'm afraid we're causing a disrespect for these signs in general. Representative Thatcher read from the Uniform Manual on Traffic Control Devices that a device had to be respected, I think the word was. And this certainly isn't the case with the 24-hour speed zone that we have now. I would really like to see us go back to the old when children are present sign. Representative Hunt has asked a number of questions about time limits, and I guess I'd even be opposed to time limits because there would be so many minutes, so many hours a day when there isn't any real reason for traffic to be driving slower. I would recommend that we just simply go back to what we had before, just like the speed zone, or just like your 2365 indicates.
Questions? Thank you, Roger. And let's see, Scott Brickner.
Chair Gilman, members of the committee, thanks for having me. My name is Scott Bricker. I'm the policy director at the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, and I also represent the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition. Although I just submitted testimony on behalf of the BTA today. As many of you know, I am interested in getting more children bicycling and walking to school, and this is actually one of the prime objectives I have in the legislature. I've been working on a Safe Routes to Schools and Safe Routes to Schools concepts in the 2001 legislature, 2003 legislature, and the Transportation Committee, your committee, has made the Safe Routes to Schools bill a committee bill. So I appreciate that, and I hope that work tails into this. I think that safety is clearly a key aspect to children around schools being able to bicycle and walk to school, and traffic speeds, the speed zones, are one aspect of that. So last legislature, when this bill was brought up, I think that was recognized. One of the reasons, and just I think in the procedural aspects, my understanding is that Mark Lear mentioned, is that the when children are present was deemed as not sufficient. Again, the dart out issue, the fact is that the children who are hit in school zones are those children who are not seen. So it would be very difficult to strictly base school zones, the school zone law, on when children are present. Clearly having some aspects, flashing lights or whatnot, are a good idea, but just strictly based on that would really counteract the main reason why children are hit around school zones. Ironically, I believe that the legislature last session tried to simplify the law. They tried to make something that was clear. It was 24/7. This is the way you're going to act. And obviously that was not what came out, was something that was clear. So I would encourage the committee to look at clarity again and try and take another crack at that. And I'd like to participate in that if at all possible. I think specifically, consistency around the state is another issue that we're looking at. I think that traffic engineers tend to like consistency, so you don't go from one jurisdiction where the regulations say one thing and the next jurisdiction the regulations say another thing. So I think that should be another thing that the work group considers when thinking about how this next law should look. As it goes for increasing bicycling and walking to school, as Mark had mentioned, and we do a lot of work together in the Safe Routes to Schools issue, traffic safety is the top issue of why children aren't allowed to bike and walk to school. However, there are other factors, including stranger danger that was mentioned by Representative Thatcher and some other factors. I think that the Safe Routes to Schools effort that we're trying to do can address those things. And every community could take on different issues. One community might not feel like that is an issue that they have, or another community might feel like that is a major problem and barrier to bicycling and walking to school. So what I've done is put out there a recommendation that we thought was a reasonable recommendation, and it sort of fits in the ballpark of what's being talked about. We said at 6 a.m. to 9 p.m., 30 mile an hour, on 30 mile an hour below streets, and then when children are present, but when flashing with higher speed streets. I think there are traffic safety funds out there that could fund flashing beacon programs. For example, there's a hazard elimination fund that ODOT currently has. It's federal transportation dollars, and those types of funds could be used for a flashing beacon program, grant program that could be given out to local communities. I think something like that should be considered, because clearly the state is saying the school zones are important. Let's look at a variety of solutions of how we can make kids safer. And then another solution that we have is to try and work on the Safe Routes to Schools program that would hopefully leverage additional federal funds to allow local communities to do some of the innovative things that they want to do. And I think there are a number of people here who stated different communities have different solutions, whether it was putting signs in advance or just a school crossing guard program, perhaps. So those are some of the recommendations. I hope to work with the committee in the future and would be happy to answer any questions. Thanks.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Scott. Benita Howard.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Benita Howard. And I'm tempted to begin by saying I've been here and done that, because I was here when children were present, was adopted. And before that, my testimony includes the language that we had as the law for requiring drivers to slow down in a school zone. And I've included it because I keep hearing it repeated. When passing a school building, or the grounds thereof, or a school crossing, during school recess, or while children are going to or leaving school, during opening or closing hours, if the presence of such building, grounds, or crossing is indicated plainly by signs or signals, you had to slow to 20 miles an hour. And crossing hours varied from city to city, from school to school. School times varied even within the same city. And there were complaints all the time about the way it was being enforced and the signing and what have you. One of my jobs used to involve going to school meetings of parent groups, and I heard that frequently. And so in 1973, the legislature looked again at the issue and decided, after lots of meetings and lots of discussion, that the simplest way to say it was when children are present. And that meant whether it was a school day or Saturday or Sunday or the summer, because kids use the school grounds a great deal during summer too. And there are summer programs going on. I live close to an elementary school, and they have summer programs going on all the time now. Ordinarily, I think I would say, when you've made this decision, as you did 2 years ago, to change the law that you should think twice before changing it so soon. But in this case, I think there are some compelling reasons why repealing the at all times feature of this law would be a step in the right direction. First, traffic laws impact almost everyone on a daily basis. And if drivers think the traffic law is unreasonable, getting them to obey it is almost impossible, especially when there are too few police available to ticket the drivers. Second, there is reason to question if it is a good idea to actually expect a law to be enforced if we know that many people believe it is unreasonable, and if even the police have been quoted as saying they think it goes too far. And I guess maybe the last comment is that I'm concerned about a requirement that, if enforced, might reinforce the attitude which some drivers already have, namely that police issue tickets to raise revenue, not because of safety. And I think all of our traffic laws have to be enforced from the standpoint of safety, not revenue. One comment I should make, I think it's significant, is that when the law was changed to when children are present in 1973, the school's own speeds, as were all speeds in Oregon except on the freeway, were designated speeds under the basic rule. Today, every speed that you see posted is a maximum speed. And that includes the 20 miles an hour in school zones. That means that they don't have to prove that you violated the basic rule. They could write a ticket above 20 miles an hour. As I read the language in Senate Bill 179, and I'm paraphrasing this a bit, I not only was reminded of the old law, but I was also reminded of the fact that sometimes in trying to make things simpler, we really get it confused. So I took the penalty section, which is not, by the way, being amended by this bill. I took the penalty section for violating school zone speeds and ran it through a readability program. It came out at just about sophomore level in college. I think maybe we need to be aiming toward making our laws simpler for people to understand, not more difficult. One of my jobs before I retired was to write the driver's manual. And we strove then to get it down to about a seventh grade level. I am awfully glad I retired before this bill passed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mrs. Howard? No. Let's see. Jack Straighten?
Very good.
Welcome, hello. Jack.
Thank you very much. You're the first public person who's gotten my name pronounced correctly in all my years, actually. Jack Straight, and thank you very much. I'm a resident of Portland, and I'm actually a person who, at the age of 13, had my front teeth knocked out while riding a bicycle to a school after hours by a car. And I was musing on that as I was listening to the testimony and realizing it's very strange that I nevertheless wish to return to the prior law of when children are present. Indeed, I was speaking with my 82-year-old mother the other day in Eugene, who loved me very much at 13 and still does, and she also is very much opposed to the present law. And it's very simply, it's poor policy to have a law on the books that triggers resentment every time a driver obeys it. I think that's not where we need to be going. And I can't think of any other law on the books that does that. Even we pay taxes in April, and that's because the law tells us to. We don't get a great deal of joy out of that, but we all know that society is served by sharing the cost of making it function. I think I grew up under the basic speed rule, in which a driver was responsible, took responsibility for slowing down at the times that it was appropriate. You know, we slowed down at 9 a.m. in a school zone, at 7 p.m. in a school zone, Sunday at 3:15. You know, I actually have not run into a child at 2 p.m. in a school zone under the prior law, but I would have slowed down, and I think that's really the way we need to go to make sure that we have laws on the books that we are willing to abide by, and to have us slow down for no reason when no one is present is just, I mean, oppressive is probably too strong a word, but I don't know of a synonym that actually is appropriate. You will hear some people saying that, well, if we have to replace all these signs, it's going to cost a lot of money, and I would declare to you that removing unreasonable state intrusion, if that carries a price tag, then we should nevertheless remove it. For instance, if your children misbehave and you demand that they change their behavior, you know, what would you say to their complaint? Well, gee, Mom or Dad, it's going to cost me $7 to fix the problem. You would say, do it anyway. And I think we should hold the legislature, the last legislature, to the same standard we would hold our children. If it costs a little bit to fix this this oppressive law, then we need to do it. So thank you very much for listening. You've been very good about not getting defensive, even though there's some rather heated tempers out here, and I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Jack. Questions?
Well, I do have a quick question, and I guess curiosity in your statement that angers people, and I guess is it the whole law that angers people? Is it part of it? Is it the 24-hour piece? Is it every? I mean, okay. If you could clarify that, that would.
Yes, thank you. It's very much a resentment that comes up about having to obey a law when there is no need for it. So when, you know, I'm driving through a school zone at, you know, 8:30 and no one is present on a Sunday, you know, I love to obey the law, and nevertheless I go, you know, I tighten up over it. So that's really what I think is behind a lot of the feeling that you've heard today.
Thank you.
A very reasonable reaction.
And you've gotten a question out of me, Jack. How would you feel about a law that changes, it says from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock in the morning, you don't have to stop at stop signs? How would you feel about that?
Well, having grown up under the basic speed law, I could say, you know, I could train myself to live with that law. I think that it's important. You know, stop signs generally are something that is not obeyed by bicycle riders and generally obeyed by car drivers. And I think that the pattern is there. We don't need to mix up what people already know and do well. This one, people are not used to. People generally resent it. Everyone I've talked to resents it. And so I would say, you know, let's go back to where we were. It was much better.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Shelley Moore.
Welcome. Hello, my name's Shelley Moore, and I'm from Salem. I'm a crossing guard for Highland Elementary on Broadway and Columbia. It's one of the busiest streets here in town. I'd like to tell you that daily I am cursed at, I am spit on, and I am called names for having to stop drivers that are very upset over having to stop for me. I don't agree with the When Children Are Present law simply because I am a lot larger than the children I am crossing. I'm wearing yellow vests. I have a yellow flag, and the cars don't stop for me. If they don't stop for me and they don't see me until I'm in the middle of the intersection, I don't see how they're going to see the kids. And this is during school hours. I just don't feel that the When Children Are Present is broad enough. It doesn't protect our children. Daily, we have cars speed through when the children are standing there. And we are a marked crosswalk with yellow flashing lights, although I will mention sometimes the lights flash when we are in school. Sometimes they flash when we're not in school. Sometimes they don't flash when we are in school. So something does need to be done about the lights. I think we need better signage. I think things need to be clearer as to when when you need to be going 20. I would not be opposed to having a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit in school zones at all times, because I have children that go to school after 4 that are in school before 8 o'clock. My sons are in band. They're in school at 7:15. We have PTA meetings where we're out at 7:30 at night. We do have school events where, you know, some of the kids are walking to school by themselves. They're fifth graders, they're 10 years old, and they're walking to school by themselves at night for a school event that we're holding. We don't have, you know, a crossing guard out there for them to cross. So I am concerned for children's safety. Like I said, I feel that I'm much larger than the average child, and the cars don't stop for me. And I'm in the protective gear and protected under law that they're supposed to stop, and they don't. So I think the issue is not the inconvenience it causes a driver. The issue is this is our children's safety. And if we have to leave work 10 minutes early to get to work on time, isn't that worth the life of a child? Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative.
I appreciate your willingness to come in, especially when you're running counter to the vast majority of testimony that we've heard. I applaud your bravery. Talk a little of the variety of potential solutions that have been floated around today that aren't necessarily the old law and aren't necessarily the new law. Do any of those resonate?
Well, I know my husband and I differ on this because he drives to Corvallis, and he hits the crosswalks that are in the 55-mile-an-hour zone where they aren't well marked, and by the time he hits them, the signs are there. And, you know, like he says, you have to slam your brakes on and slow down considerably to try and get down to 20 before the school runs. I'm sorry, I'm nervous. This is my first time here. But he feels that that causes a bigger danger, that when he has to slam his brakes on and stop and the cars behind him are coming up on him, that that causes a danger in those issues. So for him, the higher speed limits and having to slow down, they're not well marked. They don't have enough time to actually slow down to the speed limit. For my situation, we have 6 signs, we have 2 sets of flashing lights, and we have me standing out on that crosswalk, and you know what? It doesn't matter. They still speed through there every morning and every afternoon. And we do turn them into the police. The police do come out. Again, unless they're going 45 or higher, they really don't get ticketed, and people know that. So I agree a compromise needs to be found, but I think the areas right next to the school, when I am standing there, my back is to the school, those areas need to be 20 miles an hour. And, you know, I think they need to be at all times. We have a park associated with our school. The kids are there in the summer. We have free lunch program in the summer. They're there during the summer. And they don't need a parent with them to go get free lunch at the school. So they're going to be crossing that street in the middle of the summertime. So I think the biggest concern is those school crossing areas that are right next to the schools. Those really need to be kept at a low rate. Does that help?
Anything further?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, Judy Hayes. Judy may have decided we've been too long. Karen Randall.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and I would like to address you as a parent, a pedestrian, a driver, and a resident of Salem, Oregon. My name is Karen Randall. My son, he is a sophomore in high school, and he leaves for school at 6:30 in the morning on his bike with his lights on and his helmet. My daughter is 8 years old. She attends Scott School. I drive her across town to school, going through another school zone on my way taking her to school. One of the schools I would like to discuss about is Grant School. It's a couple blocks from where I live, and it is on the other side of Fairgrounds Road. Fairgrounds Road is a very busy street in Salem. My daughter and I were almost hit by a driver after dark when we were in the school crosswalk on Fairgrounds Road. There was a street light. We were in light-colored clothing. It's a straight stretch. It's not around a corner. It's right there where you can see it at a distance. She saw us in the street, and she hit the accelerator. We barely got out of the way. The crossing guard for this school, I am not aware of his name, but he has told my husband and I before that there have been many times he has literally had to jump out of the road because cars were swerving to hit him. At Scott School, this morning on my way there to take my daughter to class, we go through a school zone, a crosswalk between Lansing, that goes across Lansing, and Silverton Road. The crosswalk has lights. They were not functioning this morning. Driving through there, it's a 35 mile an hour zone. I'm slowing down to 20, and I'm getting passed by a couple of hurricanes zipping through there. If someone had been in the crosswalk, they very well could have been hit. There wouldn't have been time for them to apply their brakes. They were driving that fast. This is commonplace at the corner of Lansing and Silverton Road. My little girl attends Scott Elementary School. This morning, on my way out of there, our crossing guard, Debbie, flagged down three cars in a row, flagged them to slow down. Not a single one slowed down. Not a one of them. Traffic lightened. She crossed the road. When she got on the other side of the road, I would say there were a good half dozen cars past us after that. And I would guess at least four of them were speeding. I don't know how fast they were going. I don't have a radar gun, but I can tell you it was much faster than 20 miles an hour. And on one occasion, I even had to call chariots because there was a bus during the time school lets out and children were in the area, 3 o'clock. There was a school bus, not a school bus, but a chariot's bus speeding through there so fast, I couldn't even get the bus number off of it. But because of the routes the buses take and the time of day it was, they figured out which bus it was. And thankfully, chariots handled the matter swiftly and appropriate as far as I know. But to me, ladies and gentlemen, it's not an issue of when it's 20 miles an hour. It's an issue of enforcing 20 miles an hour. I've almost had my legs taken out in the parking lot at Scott Elementary School because some parent was in too big of a hurry to pull out of there. And that's what I came to say.
Thank you very much. Questions? Yes. Representative Thatcher.
Are you saying you want to leave the law as it is, Lewis Hart?
I would like to see measures put into effect to enforce the law. As it is, crossing guards do not have radios to be in contact with the police. Crossing guards have complained to me personally that they have a really difficult time getting an officer out there because officers are so taxed with other matters. I would love to see something done that would protect our children. It's frankly, it's scary out there.
I just want to say I identify with I've been a flagger, have flaggers, and yeah, people just blow right through your stop signs and flip you off and everything else and give you all kinds of grief. Maybe what needs to be addressed is, I mean, these were apparently already 20-mile-an-hour zones.
Yes, ma'am, they are.
Blasting through them, and maybe there needs to be something to the effect like flaggers have where it's, you know, if they're disobeying that device, then they can get a ticket or at least a visit from the police officer later saying, look, you know, this is serious. Might give them a warning or something. That's what happens out on work zones anyway, so yes. Possibly.
Thank you very much for hearing me.
Thank you for coming. Yes. Okay. Troy, I think we're ready for you. And I warn you, Troy, you're only going to have about 5 minutes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'll watch the clock dutifully. My name is Troy Costales. I'm manager of the Transportation Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. And what I'd like to do is just cut to a couple things during this afternoon's testimony that may not have been brought up. First, last session, Senate Bill 179 did start as a Department of Transportation requested bill solely to modify and strengthen the definition of when children are present. That is not the bill that came through the chambers and was put into law. And I want to say thank you for holding this hearing, the one Wednesday night, and any others that you might be working on relating to this conversation. The other item I'd like to point out, and if I can for just a second, on specific to House Bill 2365 and your conversation about when children are present. Last session, 179 changed that definition. When children are present only applies to those crosswalks leading to the school grounds. And it talks about a child being in the crosswalk, at the crosswalk, or with a crossing guard. So just as you go through, I would say, as you go through and look at the working group and have that conversation, if the definition of when children are present is going to be brought back, then the statute of 811.124 would need to be revised because it was shrunk to just deal with those crosswalks, as Representative Burley was talking about, that lead to the schools, not the school grounds proper themselves. The other item I'd like to bring out is last, during 179 discussion, at the very end of session, there was a conversation about the double fine provision. And the double fine provision was put in by the legislature in order to heighten the awareness around school zones. It was eliminated in the 24/7 zones. So there may be signs up, and I can tell you I drive through one every day on my way into work that still is a 24/7 zone and still says double fines. That actually doesn't apply. It is meant to be when children are present, and the legislature debated that in a conference committee at the end of session last time. So as you deliberate and talk about potential fixes and conversations, I didn't hear anybody bring up the double fine conversation, but it would throw that in the mix to say that there's a difference on how the double fines and some confusion about where it is and where it isn't. The bill, the final bill of 179, came about because of constituent complaints to their legislators about the ambiguity of when children are present. And there's been a conversation in this building since 1997 about what should the definition of when children are present be. And some of the conversation you've heard today, and you've probably heard in your office, phone calls and letters, was all swimming about since 1997 of trying to figure out where do you land. And the legislators that sponsored the changes to 179 had very specific things that they were looking for addressing. And some of those problems still exist, and the particular law brought about some other problems. And those are the unique things I wanted to bring out, Mr. Chairman, and would be more than happy to try and answer questions in the few remaining minutes, or I will be here again Wednesday evening if you want to postpone that.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you, Troy.
Thank you.
Anyone else to speak on schools and speed zones? Come on up and state your name.
Sorry I wasn't on the list, but I came to listen to this, and I think I've got some comments at this point. My name is Smith, Kent Smith. I live in Salem, Oregon, representing Burgers District. I've heard comments here about this is a confusing law. It's hard to understand. I don't think so. It's very easy to understand. It's 20 miles an hour in a school zone, 7 days a week, 24 hours. There's nothing confusing about that. There's a 35-mile-an-hour zone. It's easy to understand the exception there. Thing is, it's wrong. In this country, there used to be Jim Crow laws. They worked. They were great. Everyone understood them, but they were wrong. My feeling is that you license people to drive an automobile. That's what we give a license for. They have shown competence to understand what it means when children are present, to show prudence, to show care and some prudence when you're driving an automobile. So therefore, when children are present, it worked great. We keep hearing about it. It's for the children, for the children, for the children. It's about enough to make you sick. I remember being 6 years old. I knew how to cross a street. And when I became a driver, I knew how to obey traffic laws, too. And one good example of this, right here in Salem, if you ever go out on State Street about the 2600 block, there's a big house out there. There's a bunch of geese live out there. There's no speed limit law concerning the geese, but every time those geese attempt to cross State Street, four lanes and a turning lane, guess what? Traffic slows down and acts accordingly. And you know something else that's really amazing? The geese have sense enough to show caution too. I've observed it many times. So to think that kids aren't smart enough. Now, we had some earlier testimony that children actually think the grill of an automobile coming at them is a smiley face. Excuse me. Any real red-blooded American kid knows different. They know how to deal with a busy street and cars. Another thing I've heard about this law, it was to enable you, police, to be able to figure out when children are present. I tell you, the 99.9% of the motoring public out there is licensed, competent drivers, know what it means. I really feel sorry for police agencies that don't know what it means. When you've got a bunch of elementary kids come to school in the morning, that's what it means. When you got a bunch of 15-year-old punks standing across the street from the high school smoking cigarettes, that doesn't constitute when children are present. Hey, I was there once. I did it. I know what it means. So, all in all, the law is not confusing like some people want to say. It's very well understood. It's wrong. And please, I'd like to ask you to change it. And thank you.
That is all. Thank you very much, Ken. Questions? Anyone else? Meeting is adjourned.